You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Annie Prue has written three volumes of stories set in Wyoming, but her latest book is a memoir set there, a blow-by-blow account of her quest to build a house on a 640-acre parcel of land that she named Bird Cloud, that's in the southern part of the state. It's also the title of the book, which is published by Scribner, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Pulitzer Prize, National Book, and Penn Faulkner Award winner of Annie Prue back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
This book is billed as your first volume of nonfiction in more than 20 years. Didn't you write some how-to books before your fiction career got off the ground?
I certainly did, yes. Before I decided to write fiction, I was doing things on gardening and I guess you'd call them rural arts of a sort.
But this is your first memoir. You once told me that you don't agree with people who advise that you should write what you know. Are you disobeying your own advice here?
No, because that advice to write what you know, I always turned around to know what you write and go ahead and venture into new areas, but learn about it as you go. And certainly the Bird Cloud experience has been a big learning experience in every possible way.
And I suspect to some degree it's connected with your writing of fiction because some of the research that you must have done to write some of the works of fiction went into your thinking about even living in this area.
Quite, yes, that's so. Of course, I'd been living in Wyoming for the past 15 years, or at the time that we built Bird Cloud, the last 14 years, 13 years, something like that. So the state was hardly a new place to me. It's just that this place was.
You include some of your family history. Your father was French-Canadian. Your mother's family is from New England. Where did you grow up?
All over. My father was in textiles and very ambitious, and we moved and moved and moved and moved.
And how did you feel about all that moving? Did it seem like an adventure, or did it make you yearn to have something more stable?
A little of both. It was, I think it made me rather disconnected, and I took refuge in books, a habit that never disappeared. So that was the steady, solid world, the world of libraries and books and finding the outside through pages rather than adventure in a new place, because the new places weren't adventure. You had school, you had it was the same.
But often when people have a tumultuous childhood, they seek a certain stability as adults. But you've lived in a number of different places as an adult, Vermont, Newfoundland, New Mexico, Wyoming, all over the place. Have you been searching for the place where you would feel most at home?
For a long time, I believed I was, and I thought Bird Cloud would be it. But now I think I realize that I'm just kind of a gypsy. And one of the most inconvenient things about my life is bookshelves with 5,000 books on them. It's very, very hard to be constantly shifting ground. I grow discontented and unhappy with where I am, so it's time to shift. And it's a terrible habit, but that's how it is.
Is this a problem for French-Canadian writers in the United States? Didn't Jack Kerouac spend much of his life looking for a place where he would feel comfortable settling down?
Right, and David Plant has been in London forever and ever. It's kind of a thing, I think. There's a rootlessness there and has been from the beginning, I believe. And after all, French-Canadians and Franco-Americans, where is the homeland? It's not Quebec. Quebec's not particularly interested. It's not the United States. It's certainly not France. So you're kind of in a floating world.
One of my producers suggests that you become an e-book writer and you can put all those 5,000 books in one or two e-books.
Yeah, scanning. A lot of them are out of print, rare, odd.
I'm sure Google
things.
Would be thrilled.
I bet they would.
When did you discover Wyoming? What was it about the state that made you decide to settle there?
It was years ago when I was working on a novel called Postcards, and I sent my protagonist off across the country, and I wanted very much to avoid what had happened to John Steinbeck when he wrote Grapes of Wrath. People in Oklahoma are still angry at him because he placed the Okies and the drought and all of the Dust Bowl in the lush part of the state that didn't have the problem, because he did his research sitting in a room with a road map. He didn't go there. So I followed my protagonist across the country. And when I landed in Wyoming, I went to the U-Cross Foundation in the town of U-Cross, population 25, and fell quite madly in love with the long, long sight lines and the ability to walk and work out plot bits. It just suited me very, very
so
well.
So do you visit every place that you write fiction about? Because Martin Amis told me once he really doesn't go to Camden Town to see if the fish and chip shop is next to the pharmacy. He just puts it there. And
yeah, well, I just put it there too, but I like to have the substructure there to have it correct what kinds of plants are growing there, what direction the wind blows from, that sort of thing.
And you include chapters on the history of the area. So you must do a lot of research. You're probably doing it for your fiction and wound up being able to apply it to your real life.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got that research habit. I was trained as an historian, and it just stuck with me forever.
So 15 years ago, 1995, you bought a house in the small town of Centennial. Why there?
Because it was close to the National Forest and had wonderful cross-country skiing, and there was grand views, and it was an interesting place with an old police car parked by the side of the road to deter speeders. And the old police car had no lights on top, so locals had substituted coffee cans with little those little round things that you, when you're putting tar paper on a roof. So these little round things were all fastened on with wire so that they sparkled in the wind. Of course, the wind blew all the time.
Yeah, you say this is a very windy place. It sounds to me like a perfect place to put up a windmill farm.
Yes, it would be if you didn't have quite so many birds.
But you stayed in that house only 10 years. Mm-hmm. Was it your plan all along to buy something else?
Yeah, I had been looking for another place and didn't find anything. And then a friend mentioned one day, well, have you thought about looking over on the other side of the Medicine Bow Range in the town of Saratoga? And I said, oh, it's very beautiful over there, but I don't think there's anything for sale. And she said, well, there is a place for sale. The Nature Conservancy has a parcel that they want to sell.
Why would they want to sell it? Isn't it that's federally owned land, isn't it?
No.
Oh, but it's not privately owned land.
Well, the Nature Conservancy is an organization dedicated to conservation, and they do buy parcels of land, and they do sell parcels of land, too, with conservation easements attached. So at that point, they don't have to hold on to the land anymore, but the protection is there.
So you had, there were all sorts of strings attached when you buy land like this.
The
restrictions such as what you could build on it and whether
you have to
keep a lot of it wild.
Yes, the size of the lot where you put your house and buildings and so forth is agreed on and so forth. There was not enough conservation for me. I didn't want cattle included. But the Nature Conservancy in Wyoming is very friendly with ranchers who are the source of much of their land. So they wouldn't agree to excluding cattle in case I ever sold the place. They would not agree to prohibit selling to cattle people.
My guest is Annie Proulx, who's won pretty much every major literary award, the Pulitzer, a National Book Award, the Irish Times International Fiction Prize, a Penn Faulkner, and she's the author of a number of best-selling novels, and the short story Brokeback Mountain, which was made into a memorable film. Her latest book is a memoir called Bird Cloud. You say that people in the area don't use architects, but you decided to hire one.
I did.
Now, why don't they use architects? They just say to the builder, I want a four-bedroom house,
they
two bathrooms?
They know what they want. They know what they want. And the ideal model is in everybody's head that it should be a log structure and it should have a great room and a fireplace and so forth. There's a prevailing architecture, and that's what conservative people who honor traditional forms go for. But I was interested in having something that would take advantage of the 500-foot cliff that was directly in front of the property. And I had known Harry Teague in Aspen for some years and really admired his work. I thought he was a fine architect. And Harry came up and looked at the site, looked at the cliff looked back, and it was a day when the wind was screaming. And I stupidly thought, well, this is an anomaly. You know, it's going to be quiet most of the time. But he made a mental note that the wind was a major consideration, and he designed the house so a narrow end of the roof with a considerable slope faced into the wind, and the wind rises up and goes over the house rather than battering full on.
Did your land have potable water, electricity, telephone lines?
No.
You had to put all that in?
Yeah. The water in this part of Wyoming is very alkali, extremely unpleasant to drink if you have ever tasted alkali water. And so we had to put in a reverse osmosis system that took the alkali out. There were no electrical lines in. We put in the electricity. No phone line was ever put in. We have no landline and have to use a cell phone. Reception's not very good, but it's more of a writing place than it is communications place.
And then you had to find a builder who could put this architect's vision into reality. You call the people who you hired to do the landscaping, the James Gang in Wyoming. Builders often also do the landscaping and vice versa, don't they?
Yeah, usually landscaping is kind of sketchy because there's so much around you. But this was flat, open prairie that had been used for open pasture for many, many decades, probably forever. So getting some trees and rocks in there was important. And I was very fortunate to fall in with the James Gang.
How long did this take to put together?
About 2 years.
Wow, that's a long time. Do you think some fans of York might be shocked at your perfectionism when it comes to this house, or is that just another side of the perfectionism that you bring to your writing? It is one of the things that seems to have upset some of your reviewers.
What?
That perfectionism. The fact that you demanded everything to be exactly right, they kind of were critical of, that your insistence on those things, or writing about it anyway. I don't know if you read the review in the New York Times.
I haven't. I've been horribly busy. I know that it was a negative review, but I have not read it at this point.
So you built a house. And now isn't it up for sale? Didn't I read that it was up for sale?
It was, but then I fell in love with it all over again. Yeah, there are flaws there and difficulties, but weirdly enough, the county actually plowed the road right up to the front gate about 2 weeks ago.
For the first time? You thought that you had been promised that they would do that all along.
Well, I had been told by the agent who was handling the property for the Nature Conservancy that, yeah, sure, the county maintained the road. It was one of the first questions I asked. Found out the hard way they didn't, but now suddenly they did. And it's probably because there are some other people who've built farther down the road who are rather important locally. So perhaps they're plowing to their place. I don't know.
Maybe Mayor Bloomberg finally was embarrassed by what was going on there. Will you be writing any more fiction set in Wyoming?
Oh, I'm sure I will, yes.
Oh, you're not working on another book right now?
I am working on another book, but it's not set in Wyoming. It's kind of a sweep across the North American continent, down across the Pacific to Australia and New Zealand.
But it's my sense that you're saying you are going to remain in Wyoming, finally.
I hope, yeah. But, you know, I go around. I miss cities terribly when I'm there too long. And fortunately, I do get to go to many other cities. So that saves my bacon, as it were.
Annie Prue's other books are Heart Songs and Other Stories, Postcards, The Shipping News, Accordion Crimes, Close Range, The Old Ace in the Hole, Bad Dirt, and Fine Just the Way It Is, all fiction. Now we have a memoir called Bird Cloud. It is published by Scribner, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you. ¶¶